The Cystic Fibrosis Center at Children's Health has evolved over the past 30 years. And today, we're sitting down with our expert, Barbara Baum, a cystic fibrosis social worker who has worked for the program for almost that entire time and will be retiring this June 2020. We'll chat about how medications and therapies, laws and research have all changed and evolved over that time. This is Pediatric Insights, Advances and Innovations with Children's Health. I'm your host, Caitlin White. Let's start from the beginning, Barbara. Can you tell us what the cystic fibrosis program was like during the earlier years?
So I started in the end of August of 1988. And really, there are many things that we have today that we did have back then. Because the CF Foundation had we were a CF-approved foundation center, which we still are. So part of their philosophy was, because this was such a chronic illness, you really needed to have a team approach. So aside from the physicians, and at that time, the physicians were all pediatricians who had decided to specialize in cystic fibrosis, so there was no real specialty. Today, they're pediatric pulmonologists. When I started, there were 1.5 social workers. I actually was a half social worker to begin with, and there was someone who was full-time before that and continued. You know, there was respiratory therapist, there was a dietitian. We even had a chaplain at one point. Child Life was very involved. And we would all meet as a team at least once or twice a week and go over all the patients, either before they came to visit clinic and sometimes after they came to clinic. And also we had our own space at that time. So in terms of clinic, we didn't share space. So we could take as long as we wanted with our patients. And in those days, it was before. In today's world, everyone wants to get in and out as quickly as possible. Those CF appointments are still long. When I first started, everyone came at 8 o'clock in the morning. Some would leave by 11, and some would leave by 2 or 3 in the afternoon. So what I was always able to say later on is, when parents would say, "How come our appointments are so long?" I would say, "It could be worse. In the old days, everyone had to come at 8. Back then, having cystic fibrosis was much more of a death sentence, not an immediate death sentence, but it was really much difference between night and day, between now and then. You know, of course, you gave hope, and there was hope, and patients continued to live longer. But when they were first diagnosed back then, almost everyone was put in the hospital for 4 to 7 days. Partially for education, or always for education, and then sometimes they stayed longer depending on how their health was. Because back then, not everyone was diagnosed at birth. Well, through newborn screening, which we didn't have until, I think, 2009. So back then, when someone was diagnosed, they were put in the hospital, and then we did education across the doctors and the social workers and respiratory therapists and the nurses. You know, did I not mention the nurses originally? Of course, the nurses. And we would all, you know, meet with the families. We would have different times that we would go in and talk to them and try to educate them. And we all had different pieces. And, you know, usually at least one parent was there, sometimes both. Sometimes grandparents would come in. You know, it was a very hard time. You know, there was a lot of denial in the beginning, anger, kind of Kubler-Ross stages. And eventually acceptance. In those days, and as it's now, I mean, when patients generally come into the hospital for a CF exacerbation, it's 10 to 14 days. It was like that back then, too. Now we've kind of worked on cutting it down, and I think our average is 11 days. But when patients come in, it's for a long time.
So can you talk about the evolution of infection control guidelines in this time?
You know, in the beginning when I started, the CF community, especially at Children's and our clinic, was pretty close-knit. When children would go in the hospital and the parents knew each other, and sometimes the kids would go into the other patient's room and vice versa. At Children's, we had the playroom, and the CF kids could go in together, and they knew each other, and they were able to form some kind of camaraderie and realize that, you know, they weren't alone. Because, you know, CF, though it's the most common, you know, recessive genetic chronic illness, it's still not, maybe there's only about 30,000 people at one time alive in the U.S. with CF. And now only half of them are children. So it's really rare, even though it's not, but it is. So they were able to do that. And we had camp. Now, we would have a five-day camp every summer. And it was a sleepover camp. And it was for kids 6 to about 17. We started out at Camp Sweeney, which is the camp for children with diabetes. And we would go right before camp started. So I think we went like Memorial Day weekend, something like that. So around now, actually. And we would go for about 5 days, 5 or 6 days. And the chefs and the cooks at the camp loved us because for the kids with diabetes, they had to watch, you know, it was very rigid what they need to eat and whatnot, especially back then. But our kids needed to eat as many calories as possible. So for 5 days, the chefs got to go wild and, you know, make everything with lots of calories. What was so nice is that we maybe would have 80 to 100 kids at camp. And in those days, you know, they could be together. And when they would go down the line of getting their food, there would be cereal bowls that were filled with enzymes. And every kid knew which enzymes they took, you know, by the color. And they would just, you know, they got their this, they got their dessert, and then they would take their enzymes and go sit down. And so anyway, we had camp for a few years. It was beneficial, but it was also tough because in one way, you get to know everyone. On the other hand, kids died more often back then. So that was very hard, you know. And then a few years later, something called Bsypatia, which is a bacteria that evidently three centers, it was a very small percentage of patients with CF. And then three centers got a very large percentage, and they had a large number, relatively speaking, patients who died. So then they decided we really can't have camp anymore. And that was a big deal because, again, there were so many benefits. We even had a sibling camp in the fall for the kids with CF and their siblings. It was just fun. It was a fun camp, you know. They ran around arts and crafts, sports, swimming, fishing, you name it. Dr. Prestige, we'd have a variety show. And Dr. Prestige, you know, he was known for, his costume was he was a ballet star in a tutu, in a pink tutu. So the kids loved it. And, you know, they would always refer to him as Dr. P. And, you know, it would show a warm side. It would show a different side of us, you know, which kind of was nice because you could do that at the camp. So anyway, then that's when the beginning of infection, from my perspective, the beginning of having to limit the exposure, infection control and limit exposure began. Then as time went on, but, you know, kids were still pretty much together when they were, like, in the hospital. They could still visit each other. Some of the older patients, we had a relationship with Presbyterian on Walnut Hill at the time. And some of our patients were hospitalized there. Myself and the other social worker and the nurses, some of them would come over and make rounds with the doctors. And as social workers, we would stay and you know, do our talk with our families, you know, as needed during that time. And
yeah,
they had a big area where sometimes the kids would all be doing their breathing treatments together or their CPT. Some parents who could afford more than others, and like July 4th, I remember one family, you know, bought barbecue for maybe the 10 kids and their families who were inpatient at this time. And they all sat together and ate. Well, then as time went on, that couldn't happen anymore. And I would say, you know, it's sort of hard, maybe 2005, 2006, I'm not exactly sure when CF Foundation put out more guidelines in terms of infection control and that patients really shouldn't be with each other and all of this. But it was, nobody was really enforcing it. At least our clinic was not enforcing it. And, you know, we would go to national conferences. Not everybody was really enforcing it. It was kind of hard to go from one extreme to the other. And, you know, like our kids in the hospitals would sometimes sneak out into each other's rooms, you know, and spend time when the nurses, you know, like late at night. They would, you know, they were in the hospital so much, they had a down pat and they could, you know, run across where the nurse's area was and staying low to the ground and go into someone else's room.
Can you talk about the improvement of CF therapies and medications over time?
I think Pulmozyme was the first major one because that thick, sticky mucus was thinned out. And before that, they were really, the coughing was much deeper, heartier, much more of an effort to get things out. It took out a lot of energy. And I think, you know, that was part of the reason kids got sicker sooner. Then when Pulmozyme came, that thinned it out and it made a difference. Unfortunately, for the people who were very sick, it didn't help them. It was too much, like too much stuff would come up. They felt like they were drowning in their own phlegm. So that was the first big thing that came out. Then the vest machine. Well, that wasn't until the year about, it was around, but let's say 2000 is when it really took off. And what was good about it also is that parents didn't have to do the CPT, the chest percussion therapy. It gave the kids independence, and especially when they started going off to college and things of that sort. It made a big difference. Then we got into the ivacaftor drugs. And also we had nutrition. We found that nutrition, exercise, and nutrition mean eating a lot of food, eating double the amount of calories, and exercise plus regular visits and four times a year, and, you know, doing treatments more often and whatnot. That made a big difference. And then when we got into the ivacaftor drugs, that was spectacular. The first one, I think in 2012, was Kalydeco. And I can remember, I'll tell you two quick instances. So, you know, we used to follow the adult patients as well, but they would come to children's. So one of the adults who I knew since he was a kid, and he was about 25 and or 20, in his 20s, and I said, how's the Kalydeco? He said, oh, Barbara, it is great. And he sat up on the table, you know, in the exam room, and he said, when I used to try to take a deep breath, it was hard. And he took the deepest breath, and I still get goosebumps. The other story is a girl was in college, and so she started taking Kalydeco before she had come home, and it was a Christmas break. And anyway, so she's in the room, and she says to me that they had moved to a condo about a year or two before, and they were on the second floor. So she and her mom had gone out doing Christmas shopping, and they had to walk to the second floor. And they walked to the second floor, you know, going home. And the mother stared at her, and she said, Mom, why are you staring at me? She said, because you walked up the steps effortlessly. And anyway, and it's only gotten better since. And with Trikafta, it's really amazing. And then there's been, you know, Syndeco, and between Kalydeco and really Trikafta have been the two unbelievable ones.
So tell us about how life expectancy among CF patients has improved over time, as well as the quality of life.
Yes. So when I first started, probably the average age was probably in the teens. And now it's about 47. And really, they say a child born today will probably live to old age. And as time went on, like, we now have an adult clinic. In the old days, you didn't need an adult clinic because no one lived that long. Or if they did, it was very few. And then as time went on all around the country, people were living longer and better lives. Not always better lives, but they were living longer, and then they started living better lives. So then what happened is the CF Foundation said we need to have adult clinics as well. So what happened, though, is that all these families trusted the pediatrician because their kids were not supposed to grow up. So all of a sudden, they're growing up, and you want the person who helped them to grow up not be their doctor anymore? How could you do that? It was not easy. What we did is the internal medicine pulmonologist would come to children's, and the rest of the staff stayed the same. And then once they, if they got sick, then they had to go into the adult hospital, which at that time was St. Paul's. And that worked for many years. But again, you know, and people would come with their kids to clinic. Okay, so you had the patient coming to children's with their kids. And when you did PFTs, they'd give them little balls and airplanes, you know, little toys. And the kids thought, oh, this is great. But anyway, right after Kalydeco, about 8-9 years ago, we finally did have the patients move over to UT Southwestern. And today, I mean, we have patients graduating high school, many college, trade school, graduate school, getting jobs, many getting married, having children one way or another. It's all changed. And what the adults will say when you ask them about, you know, needing to take treatments, they'll say, it's not that I like taking treatments particularly, but it gets me what I want. And I have a good job. I have a family. I have children. etc.
What about the social work aspect of your career? How has that changed over time, and what impact does it have on patients?
Well, I think I've had the luxury, first of all, to know my patients from the time they come to Children's to the time they either leave and go on to the adult clinic or move away and, of course, sometimes pass away. So I have the luxury of seeing them when they come to clinic. They're supposed to come at least four times a year. So I may see them three times a year. I may see them more if they're sick, they come more often. If they're sick, they're in the hospital. We follow them both inpatient and in clinic. So in terms of continuity, I have that. And you've really seen over time how there was time when patients, some got double lung transplants, but you've really seen how patients have done much better. A lot of advocacy for school and the Americans with Disabilities Act, things got better. Now, insurance was a problem way back when. There were caps on insurance. CF was expensive. Parents couldn't change jobs because of pre-existing condition. It was very, very stressful. And finally, we got the high-risk pool insurance, but that was not wonderful. People had to do, and you had to help them. If they wanted a transplant, they had to do fundraising. There was lots of stress. And now, as time went on, school became easier for a while. And, you know, you'd write a letter about what kind of things, accommodations they needed, like going to the bathroom when they needed to, if they're out from school longer, getting their enzymes, things like that. But then now things have kind of gone backwards a little bit. Because schools get paid by the child, if you're out of school for whatever reason, even with a 504 plan, it's tougher. So you spend a lot more time having to advocate for those kids in school. Insurance. I never used to spend every clinic visit asking them if their insurance changed or what's going on. But in the last, I'd say, 10, 12 years, I've had to do that because you don't want someone to lose their insurance, you know, because then they can't get care. And that has become more and more of a problem again, where it wasn't for a while and then it was.
Tell us about the creation of the multidisciplinary care program at Children's Health.
In terms of cystic fibrosis, that's always been. It's gotten better. 2013 is when Dr. Preeti Sharma and Dr. Meganis Hate became the co-directors of the CF clinic. So Dr. Sharma is a pediatric pulmonologist, and Dr. Sate is a pediatric gastroenterologist. So they have really, we have had good teams over the years. And then once or twice we didn't have as good a team. But we have a spectacular team, work very well together. We do a lot of quality improvement, which we didn't used to do, and the whole team does it. When we have our education day or a holiday party for the families, whatever we do, this team works totally together. Everyone's involved in quality improvement. We have research going on. It's made a big difference. In that way, you know, our clinic has really changed. But we've always had a multidisciplinary clinic. It's just that we do more now.
And I know that there is now a parent advisory committee, too. Walk us through how that got started.
Okay, well, actually, the CF Foundation had promoted that for a number of years. At Children's, it took a while, so we were able to do it in the CF clinic because our population kept growing, and I was the only CF social worker, and then I had to do some other things, so there just wasn't the time. You know, obviously, patient care has to come first. And then we did get another half-time social worker about 5 years ago, I think it was. And then we were able to start a parent advisory committee. And basically, we met as a team and threw out names. And we started more by hand-picking. And we had about, I think originally we had 12 to 14. Unfortunately, I tried to do a very diverse group in terms of socioeconomic status, insurances, government versus group health, ages of children, et cetera. In the end, we wound up with a core of about 9 or 10 people, and it has been really outstanding. And in sort of partnership with the doctors and the whole team, infection control has been a very big part of it. We no longer sit outside in the clinic space, you know, waiting room. Everything is done in the patient's room, even being weighed and height and everything. It's all done in the room. Blood draws are done in the room. Of course, seeing the patient is done in the room. Checkout is done in the room. They've really done as much as they can to limit the amount of infection control. when Children's Health went about a year or 2 years ago to having the kiosk downstairs. Unfortunately, that's not good for our patients for infection control. So we were able to put together a laminated pass that, you know, they can go right upstairs. They don't have to do that. They're working with the hospital. You know, a lot of our kids are in a lot. So they work with respiratory therapy to try to get things on the same page and working more with Child Life, which has always been wonderful, to make schedules up for the kids and things of that sort. It's a great committee.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Barbara, and congratulations on retiring this year. That was Barbara Baum, a cystic fibrosis social worker at Children's Health. You can find more information about what we discussed today at childrens.com/CF. This has been Pediatric Insights. I'm Caitlin White. Thanks for joining us.